So we're talking about wine. I can remember a time when that meant a flag and a something called claret, but that ages me significantly. Australian wines having increased in their sophistication and in their variety, and that is our text this morning. We welcome wine journalist and author Max Allen. Max, welcome.
Morning.
So we used to be all about your Shiraz and your Chardy. These things are still popular, but increasingly we find a bewildering variety of varietals.
And good use of the proper language there too.
Thank you.
Variety of varietals. Yes, a huge diversity of grape varieties out there across Australia now. There's about 150 grape varieties grown commercially in Australia.
How many in the world?
About 1,500.
Wow.
So it's an extraordinary plant, the grapevine. It mutates at the drop of a hat and it likes to cross with other grape varieties and produce new grape varieties. And
but that's a tremendous sort of happy viticultural accident.
Wonderful.
That
absolutely
it's so
wonderful.
Amenable. To that kind of treatment.
And the beauty of it is that it adapts to its environment. So you find grapevines grown in England quite happily, yes. Increasingly, and you find grapevines grown in Northern Africa.
Back in that day that I referred to of the flagon au claret, what was in that?
Anything they could get their hands on. But funny you should ask. That's a very good question because in the old days when people made Burgundy and Claret and Dry Red, it really didn't matter what grape varieties they used.
Yes.
They used whichever were best for the job at the time. And very often it was grape varieties like Grenache, which is a really good grape variety if you want to make a lot of wine, as in it produces a lot of grapes on the vine.
See, there's an interesting question there for a consumer.
Mm.
Am I knowledgeable enough to know what I will be tasting from a particular variety, or should I be guided by a recognisable style?
In the old days, you were guided by style, and now people are absolutely guided by grape variety. And one of the most exciting things, I think, is that a lot of wine producers are wanting to go back to the style idea because it gives them more flexibility in a cool...
They can put any old rubbish
they can
into
put,
it.
No, not any old, no. No, no, this is the modern premium wine industry we're talking about. But they do have enormous flexibility. And in fact, you could have written this as though it were a script. This first wine that I wanted to show you is a good example of that.
All right, describe. Tell
okay,
us about this.
Okay, so... The point of this, one of the most exciting things I think has been happening in Australian wine in the last 20 years is that people have planted all these other grape varieties, not just Chardonnay, Cabernet, Shiraz. And a lot of people are thinking very carefully about which varieties are going to be the saviour of the wine industry, if you like, in a hotter, drier world.
Okay, yes.
And so this first one I've got here is from the Riverland. I'm not sure whether I'm... mentioning brand names or but it's important that actually this Richard Terra is the name of the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the people who is really thinking very hard about what varieties are going to grow well in the vineyards along the Murray River.
Because that, I mean, what you say there about climate, that to me would be at the moment perhaps the single greatest prompter of experimentation.
Absolutely. So if you think about growing grapes along the Murray River, it's effectively a river that flows through a desert. And we have less and less water going to be allocated to those vineyards in the future. It's just a fact of life,
yep.
I think. And so which grape varieties can you grow that need less water and that are happy in a hot environment? So what this grower has done is he's gone to Italy. He's thought about southern Italy.
Oh, the happy sound.
It is a happy sound. It's almost as happy as a cork coming out, isn't it?
But
it's
we've grown accustomed to
almost as happy, but not quite as happy. I'm going to hand you this glass here.
See, a handful of days into my dry July. Check out the donor page on the Dry July website. Max is handing me wine, Max.
You don't have to drink it.
Well, I'm not going to. I'm just going to sniff and approve.
You can just sniff and spit. So the varieties that this producer has planted are Southern Italian varieties, Fiano, Vermentino, Greco.
Is that just one?
No, this is three different grape varieties.
Okay.
Fiano, Vermentino and Greco.
Yep.
Forgive my pronunciation. It's dreadful, I know. And a Portuguese variety called Arinto.
Hmm.
You've never heard of
I've never heard of any of them.
But that's because we're so used to Chardonnay, Shiraz and Cabernet.
Yes.
If you were in Naples, for example, you would have heard of Fiano. If you were in Portugal, you would have heard of Arinto. They are the normal grape varieties to those people. They're just unusual to us. But they grow beautifully well in the Riverland in South Australia. They need much less water. They bask in the heat. They're not so bothered by it. And they produce a nice, fresh, fruity, crisp, dry white wine.
It's a lovely light colour.
That wonderful moment on radio when people
swallow. Tell us, Max.
Beautiful. I think that's a lovely wine. It's got that freshness and crispness, and it is a sustainable wine for the future.
So there we are. I mean, this is the other thing. This is someone in the Riverland wanting to prolong the usefulness of that country.
Absolutely.
I mean, the alternative to moving to the Yarra Valley or Tasmania, which is another kind of thing that's happening,
is that relocation. Absolutely. So people were predicting 20 years ago that the climate change that we are currently going through was going to happen. Hmm. And they said at the time that if we carried on as business as usual in Australia, that our wine variety, our wine styles would be changed forever, that people would have to move to different regions. What has happened is that people have adapted over that time, and they've done things like, rather than plant the vine rows north-south, which means that the western side of the grapevines gets belted by the heat in the afternoon, they planted the rows east-west.
Is there no end to human ingenuity?
It's extraordinary, right? Yes. Or rather than plant the vines on the northern side of the hill to capture the sun, sun's too hot now, too much of it, so we plant on the southern side. Are you with me?
I am.
Yeah. These are quite substantial changes, because obviously you can't just, it takes a long time to move your row orientation. And
easier
like
for us, I suspect, in this wine growing country than, let's say, a grower in Burgundy.
Or Bordeaux. And Europe is going through a heat wave as we speak. And I'm looking at my newsfeed every morning, seeing another vineyard that has been burnt because of this extraordinary exposure to the western sun. And 48 degrees, extraordinary conditions where people are losing substantial portions of their crop. They're being hit with the conditions that we've kind of already been through and experienced and adapted to a certain extent. But Bordeaux, for example, the famous region where Cabernet Sauvignon, we've talked about it before, kind of reaches its peak of quality, has recently announced just this week that they will allow other grape varieties to be grown in that region.
Of necessity.
Of necessity. Yeah. So Portuguese varieties like Touriga,
which grows in a much hotter place
than Bordeaux, and other grape varieties from warmer parts of France. Now, these will only be allowed as a small percentage of Bordeaux, but as a signal of how radical the change is in wine industry thinking around the world, you couldn't get a better example than French thinking. These people have grown, they have grown Cabernet and Merlot in Bordeaux for hundreds of years. That's what they do. Suddenly, even they're saying, actually, maybe we should allow some other varieties.
How sudden can this be? I mean, the wine we've just looked at, that Riverland white, and those Italian, Portuguese varieties that have been introduced to grow that. I mean, what's the lead time on that? When did the thinking begin that these varieties might be good, we will put those in, we will get a crop? And what's the time in all of that?
About 20 years ago.
Wow.
So let's say you were on holiday in Sardinia next week, and that's probably quite likely. Mm. And you came across a local Sardinian grape variety in a little cafe somewhere on the beach, and you thought, this is a wonderful grape variety. Why don't we grow this in Australia? And then you wanted to find some planting material in a nursery somewhere in Europe, and you brought it to Australia, put it through quarantine, you planted it, blah, 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 blah. You'd be looking at about 10 years. From the moment of having long-term investment.
And there's no guarantee that this is going to work, of course.
None whatsoever. Although, obviously, there's a lot of people who are very clever at this and kind of can predict. What we also have in Australia, though, is grape varieties that have been here already for 100 or 150 years that may not be fashionable, but possibly can provide this kind of viticultural diversity.
For example?
Well, the next wine that I've got to show you, funnily enough. So this is a Cinso. I'm going to let that word just roll around for a while in the air. Mm-hmm. Cinso.
Cinso. What do we find in that?
So Cinso is a grape variety originally from the south of France. So it goes into Côte du Rhône and wine styles like that. Uh-huh. It crops really well, which is a good thing if you're wanting to make lots of wine. It produces, as you can see from the colour, listeners, it's a very pale, it's almost like a dark rosé, if you like.
Yeah.
It's very light wine.
An insipid Pinot.
I'm not going to use the word insipid. I'm going to say beautifully refreshing and But it is what this wine produces is it's almost it is like a dark rosé. It's fresh. It's clean. Lovely crisp, you'll take my word for it, lovely crisp crunchy berries.
And these are things very much of the moment in terms of what's hot right now.
Yeah, so this is a year old. It's from a producer called Brash Higgins in McLaren Vale, which is a hot region, and it's only 11-something% alcohol. So it ticks all the boxes, fresh, young, smashable red that hasn't got a lot of alcohol, that's produced in a region that is warm, and yet it flourishes in that region. I mean, it just ticks all the boxes.
So, what are the varieties we should be looking for? You know, what's the new frontier here?
In white, I think the general consensus is that Fiano, which is originally from the south of Italy around Naples, is doing some really good things in Australia. In red, the Grenache variety, funnily enough, we mentioned it before, it used to be grown in the warmer parts of Australia to produce those flagons of claret you were talking about. Grenache is enjoying a really great revival at the moment because people are saying, well, here's a variety that likes the heat. It produces wines that have a kind of a transparency. You can taste where that wine comes from, just like Pinot Noir. And so there's a lot of people describe Grenache, for example, as like the warm climate Pinot.
I guess it's the great Australian gift that we have so much regional variety. We have so many climates that, you know, if push comes to shove, our wine industry can find a place that's still going to work with the right climate, the right variety.
Up to a point.
Yes.
Yes, up to a point. I mean, there's only so much you can do and there's only so far you can go. I mean, you can't put the entire wine industry onto Tasmania. Well, you could.
Well.
But there wouldn't be much space left for all the barley they need to make all their whiskey and their beer.
These things are tremendously important.
Yeah.
Max, thank you. What a new tastes, new thoughts, a little bit of winey adventure. Thank you.
Thank you.